Good evening and welcome to episode 22 of the Vegan Hour. And let me just apologize for the delay in getting tonight's Vegan Hour up and running. Let's just blame technology. It sometimes doesn't work the best for us. Tonight, joining me live from another part of Australia. Actually, you're in Sydney, aren't you, Katrina?
I am in Sydney, yes. It's been very hot today.
Yes, the place of my birth, actually. Joining me live from Sydney is vegan journalist, author, and PR consultant, Katrina Fox. Thank you so much for coming on the Vegan Hour tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Harry. I'm looking forward to it.
So I just want to get a few formalities out of the road. First off, people watching might notice that we have the... let me just put your name up there if I can. Show name. Whoops. There you go. I think I've got it right. And I've mucked that one around as well. Let's get you back there. Okay. So people will notice I've got a little banner scrolling across the bottom there that I just want to make a mention to what's happening with all the fires, especially in New South Wales and Queensland, right at the moment in Australia, an unprecedented event, a emergency situation in at least two states that has affected countless living beings, animals, people, property damage, environmental damage, a lot of suffering, a lot of loss. And I just want to acknowledge that it is a very hard time, obviously, right at the moment, and we are still in the middle of it. And my thoughts and prayers do go out to everyone that is affected by it. And a big shout out to everyone that is helping in whatever way you can, from fighting fires through to providing donations, through to providing alternate shelter and helping animals and helping people, etc. So I just wanted to mention that it's something very, very massive right at the moment, so in Australian history. And let's hope it's not something that we're going to see more of in the future, because it's not something that any of us would wish for. So I want to also mention that the Vegan Hour is sponsored by Vegan Frothers, who do cruelty-free clothing. And if you're purchasing from them, 100% of the profits actually support animal charities, animal sanctuaries. So now is a good time to get some vegan clothing and to support animal sanctuaries that are really going to be needing it at the moment. And also my other wonderful sponsor is Cindy and Natural Food Products, who are available all around Australia in supermarkets and independent places that like IGA, etc. And all their products, all natural, gluten-free, GMO-free, soy-free, vegan products, burgers and sausages and dips and so forth. So make sure you support them as well. A fully vegan Australian company that's been going for 19 years. And finally, before we get tonight started, just a couple of quick things happening. Tomorrow night on the Gold Coast, in Burleigh Heads, BKA Vegan Restaurant has their Wednesday night bowling night, where you get vegan food for only $12 per bowl, and it is the best food around. So check that out and make sure you book, because it can get quite busy. And finally, coming up in December, it's only starting in a few weeks away on the 1st of December, Vegan Frothers are having their Tour de Froth, which is a life-changing bike tour from the Gold Coast to Adelaide. It's raising awareness for alternative and ethical choices for a better world. You can join them or you can sponsor them, and it's a 1 month bicycle ride, which is a lot more than I've ever done from the Gold Coast to Adelaide. So I think I'd end up with a sore bum after that. But anyway, right. So if you missed,
I would too.
Yes, I think anyone would. But you can join them, but you don't have to ride the whole distance. You can join them for just a leg of the ride. So if you've missed the introduction, we have Katrina Fox, who is a vegan journalist, author, and PR consultant. And in fact, when I look at your bio, Katrina, you wear many hats. I'm very, very excited to hear from you about your experiences and your vegan journey, and also how you're helping and have helped vegan businesses through media and through direct involvement and so forth. So can we start off tonight? I'd like to find out a little bit about why you're vegan, what your inspiration was. I believe it started at a fairly early age. So fill us in on the story of your awakening.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Harry. So when I was 11, I asked my mum what the beef burger was made of. So I come from a working class family in the UK. I was actually born in the East End of London, so I'm technically a Cockney, but I grew up in Southeast London, just outside Southeast London. So I asked my mum what the beef burger was on the plate, and she said, "Oh, it's made of cow." And I was very confused. I said, "What do you mean it's made of cow?" And when it finally dawned on me that this burger on my plate was once a beautiful living being, a cow, I was absolutely horrified. Now, I'm very much a city girl, but in the summer, I used to go down and stay with my cousin in the country. So I did actually spend time with cows and sheep and other animals. So I was absolutely horrified. And then I made the connection that the chicken we had for dinner on Sunday was actually alive, you know, once a live chicken, the fish fingers were live fish. And I was absolutely horrified because I'd always felt a connection with animals. My best friend growing up, I would say, was my cat Kitty, because, you know, it would give me unconditional love. I adored him. So I was just really horrified. And I just said, "I'm not eating that anymore. I'm not eating animals." Didn't go down too well. And this was quite a long time ago, in the sort of early 70s. So it didn't go down terribly well. The mid 70s. I'm not that old. It didn't really go down that well. But I sort of stuck to my guns. I didn't know the word vegetarian. So I didn't eat meat, basically, from a young age, from the age of 11. But it actually took me a lot longer to go vegan because I didn't know the word. I didn't know about the cruelty involved in dairy. You know, like everybody, I was sort of taken in by the multi-million, billion-dollar industry that tells you that, you know, happy cows give them milk, blah, blah, blah. So it took me until 1997 to go vegan. Cut a long story short, I was on an animal rights demonstration protesting in England against a farm that bred kittens for vivisection. Had a lovely school teacher next to me, and I said to her, "Would you like a sandwich?" I had a Vegemite and cheese, vegetarian cheese sandwich, and she said, "Oh no, I'm vegan." I said, "What's that?" And I said, "It's vegetarian cheese." I said, there's no animal rennet in it. Anyway, she explained to me the realities behind the dairy industry, and I was absolutely shocked because I'd been involved in the feminist movement by then, you know, and so I think the dairy issue really spoke to me even more, you know, the whole idea that, you know, for someone who fights for women's reproductive rights, you know, to be supporting an industry that is built on the hijacking of the reproductive systems of human females, I was absolutely horrified and I was annoyed. I was angry. Like, how could I have not known this? Anyway, so I pretty much went vegan straight away. So this was 22 years ago and I've been vegan ever since. And I love it. I love everything about it. It's not a sacrifice. You don't have to give anything up. And especially now, I think it's just so easy for the majority of people to be able to live vegan.
It is, isn't it? I mean, you know, long-term vegans like ourselves, we have seen such amazing change and awareness and availability and acceptance. It does every year become more and more encouraging that we are getting closer to the goal of equal rights for all living beings, essentially.
It's just amazing. And I always make a little joke that I never thought I would be cool or trendy in my lifetime. You know, I still love disco music. But, you know, I've been very excited. And it's like I recently helped a journalist from The Age on a story. I'd helped him previously and he called me up at the weekend. He said, "I'm working on a story about key trends in veganism in Australia, particularly around food. What are they?" So, you know, we brainstormed a few ideas and I talked about vegan cheese and how that's come such a long way. Because I remember taste testing, you know, vegan cheese is 22 years ago, and you've been vegan even longer, Harry. They tasted like rubber. They were hideous. But now, you know, we've got vegan brie, vegan camembert, vegan like everything. Like, it's just mind-blowing what's happening in the food side of things, the food tech side of things. I think it's really exciting and I think it's really game-changing. And certainly that's been my experience of just, you know, hearing from people. And recently I was sat next to someone at an event who told me they were a big meat lover. And when I said, well, you know, if you could eat a product that looked, tasted, smelled, smelled, sizzled, cooked, felt like it literally imitated meat in every other way. Would you eat it? She said, yeah, absolutely. So I think these next generation, these next level burgers, sausages, basically plant-based meats that are so similar, like, you know, literally can't tell them apart. I think these are real game changers, because as much as we, and I'm from an activist background, but I think as much as we do our animal rights campaigning, and we need to, and I think all different forms of activism are needed, but you've got to make it as easy as possible for people to go vegan, because not everyone is like us that will, you know, go without rather than eat something with an animal product in. We're not the norm yet, and so we do have to make it as easy as possible for people to, so it's a no-brainer for people to pick the vegan product. We need to make them more accessible, both physically and financially. I think that's another big issue, but it's exciting. It's absolutely so exciting. 22 years on, it's like, wow. And we're just at the start.
I definitely, what you say, you know, it has to be as easy as possible for people to just make the change, as you know, just shift. So and I mean, it has become so easy, hasn't it? If you walk into a supermarket, I just saw the other day, I mean, I was excited when Fry's brought out their vegan pizzas earlier this year in major supermarkets, and you know, I was amazed at how tasty these vegan pizzas are and how affordable they are. $9 for a vegan pizza, it's like, that's impressive for frozen vegan pizza, you know. But I just saw a pop up in the last week that Coles is doing their own vegan pizzas now. I'm like, it's like it's almost done. And Woolies was doing information in their catalogs or in their some sort of print media was doing information about vegan information about where you get your protein from on a vegan diet, where you get your iron from, things like that. So this is like, this is unprecedented.
It really is. I gave a talk recently at World Vegan Day, and my talk was around, you know, the pros and cons of these multinational corporations kind of coming on board with veganism or the plant-based trend, and particularly bringing out their own products. And that's what I said, we are living in unprecedented times, because years ago, these large companies, corporations, they weren't even remotely interested in anything to do with veganism. Like, we just weren't on their radar. And now all of a sudden, they're kind of falling over themselves to jump in and out. And look, let's not fool ourselves. They're in it for the ethics. I know that because I recently met Jack Cowan, the founder of Hungry Jack's, and I asked him, you know, will you take some animal-based, but instead of just adding plant-based products to your menu, will you take some animal products off? And he said, no, not, we're not brave enough yet. We're not there yet. We're not here to save the world. It's all about money. So let's not fool ourselves. Yes, they're in it for the ethics, but I think if we can keep the sales, because the plant-based sector, like food in the plant-based sector, is just, you know, growing and growing. And I think if that continues, then basically, and I know people have called me a bit idealistic and optimistic, but I think that if these companies can see that behaving in an ethical way means they can make money, then they'll follow the money. And so I really hope that that happens. I mean, obviously there's a long way to go. Like, some of these big companies that are jumping on the bandwagon have got awful ethics in regards to human rights, you know, animal rights and the environment. But I think, you know, it's going to be come down to consumers, and I acknowledge that, you know, the system, the economic system we're working in, it's far from perfect, it's broken, and I know some people say, well, we just need a whole new system. Well, yeah, that's fine, work on that, but in the meantime, this is the system we're in right now. Let's try and operate in that system, that imperfect system, as ethically as we possibly can. And I think at the moment we kind of need both. We do need these collaborations, or we do need these multinationals to get on board to extend the reach of vegan products. And it is an ethical trade-off, and I totally acknowledge that. But I think we're in a transition period, because ultimately what we want to be doing is to create that vegan economy. And there are some amazing vegan investors, you know, very high wealth individuals who are doing that, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So it is very unprecedented and exciting times.
I share your excitement. You know, your passion is very, very strong, and I share it. And it should be, for especially for us that have been vegan a long time. And, you know, as we were saying earlier, to see these changes is amazing. So let's continue to be optimistic, because, you know, it's fantastic. The world is changing. Who would have thought it? Hopefully, the world changes in time. That's a crucial thing. So I was looking at some of the things that you brought to the table as far as being an author, a journalist, a PR consultant. A few things here that I wasn't aware of: veganbusinessmedia.com and Vegan Business Talk podcast. and also your book, Vegan Ventures. So there's a lot of different areas there that you're not one that sits around and does nothing.
No, not really. I know my partner Tracy, my wife Tracy says that sometimes. She's like, you need to rest sometimes, you know, because sometimes I am a bit of an all or nothing personality. But I think, right. You know, when it's your passion, when you love it, I come from a very much from a social justice perspective. So I've been involved in feminism, you know, queer rights movements, yeah. Animal advocacy. So my background has been journalism. I've written for niche and specialist publications, as well as mainstream media like Sydney Morning Herald, ABC, etc. So it's been the past 4 years I got quite interested in entrepreneurship and this whole concept, particularly around vegan business, and I could kind of see it starting to take off. And so I just wanted to provide a platform and tools and resources for existing and also aspiring vegan business owners, where they can just, you know, be able to find out, you know, get some tools and resources. And I love interviewing people. That's obviously from my background as a journalist. So I wrote the book because there was nothing else out there. And I think there's a famous quote, I can't remember who it's by, that if the book is not written, you have to write it yourself. So I did it. And you know, I used my journalism skills. I interviewed over 60 vegan entrepreneurs for the book. And then when the book came out, I thought, oh, I miss interviewing these entrepreneurs. It's so interesting. So that's why I started the podcast. So, and I love doing that. And I'm very lucky that, you know, vegan business owners from across the globe are willing to join me, and they share their challenges. They share their success strategies because they want to help other vegan entrepreneurs, even if they're in the same, you know, industry or area. You know, they don't really see it as competition because we're all on that same mission, you know, when it comes to ethical vegan business owners. So, I'm really happy to do that. I have blog posts out on the veganbusinessmedia.com website. And then I also work with people one-on-one, and I teach vegan entrepreneurs how to do their own PR and get themselves into the media, because that's really important. I mean, the media have been reporting more and more on veganism, and yeah, sometimes, you know, it's not so, you know, positive. They like controversy and conflict. But at the same time, you know, certainly again in my lifetime, I haven't seen as much positive media coverage as I have, you know, in the past few years. And so I'm always really excited when they, when they're covering that kind of thing. And I get pitched a lot, and I'm sure you do as well for your show, Harry. And sometimes, you know, the pitches are awful, and it makes my heart sink when it's vegan entrepreneurs. So I just like to teach people how to pitch the media in the right way to maximize their chances of getting featured and essentially getting free publicity for their vegan.
See, that's an area that very much interests me, and I want to delve deeper into that. One of the things you mentioned there was that the mainstream media, and how there's a lot more just use of the word vegan, whether it's in a positive or a negative light. You know, it's out there every day. I mean, you know, we're always trolling the news feeds to see what's coming up. I'm sure you're doing the same thing
as I am.
We've
got the Google alerts.
That's right. And, you know, what are your thoughts on the negative press? Is it still like, ultimately, it's still getting the word out there so that people are more used to it? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think it's unavoidable in that, I mean, there's so many different media outlets, and ultimately a lot of them are into clickbait. What's going to get clicked on the most? What's going to get shared the most? And unfortunately, you know, the kind of sensationalist stuff, you know, particularly pitting people against one another. So pitting the farmers against, you know, the angry animal activists. And often animal activists are assumed to all be vegan. And so sometimes, you know, vegan and animal activists can get interchanged. And I mean, for me, they are kind of, like for an ethical vegan, you kind of are an animal activist anyway. So the media does love controversy. So, you know, I don't think that's going to go away. But I think what we're seeing is more of a counterbalance. So certainly in the past, you know, it's mainly been negative stuff. Even anything to do with vegan food has been, oh, it's boring, it's bland. So I think what we're certainly seeing is a lot of those myths around what veganism is, what plant-based vegan food is, for sure. And I think that's come about because of social media. People are starting to realize that, you know, being a vegan, it's not all about those stereotypes. You know, you can be vegan and be absolutely fabulous and stylish, and you know, you can eat amazing delectable food, from pizza to, you know, plant-based steaks to chocolate gattos and, you know, whatever else you want. So I think we're going to continue to see that. So that's why I feel it's important for vegan business owners and for vegan activists as well to continue to put forward positive stories, so that there is that counter counterbalance. So I don't think we can just sit back on our laurels and just wait for the media to make up their own stories. We've got to be proactive in pitching the right story to the right media at the right time and encouraging them to, you know, to, I mean, I did something, I'll give you a quick, very quick example. When they had the big animal activism protest in Melbourne that shut Melbourne CBD down for a couple of hours, and it was all over the media. And initially the media coverage was very negative. So yes. then I saw a story by a journalist for news.com.au. And so I contacted him and I said, oh, I saw your story. I wondered if you might be interested in another angle on this. I think that these protests are a tipping point for veganism in Australia, and you know, it's a chance for the government and business to get on board in transitioning to a plant-based economy. And immediately he wrote back, and I could have assumed, oh, you know, he's written a negative story, he's not going to be open to this. He wasn't at all. He wrote back, he said, oh, I really like this angle. And he did a whole, literally the 24 hours later, he did a whole story full of my quotes about, you know, and these protests are a tipping point for Australia. And it was a lovely positive story. So that's what I mean about being proactive. Otherwise we could just sit back and let them make up their own stories. But sometimes, you know, you can put another angle that's more positive, and they'll go, yeah, okay, this is great. This is a new, because journalists are looking for new stories and new angles all the time.
Yeah.
We're in a 24-hour news cycle. So I think it's important for vegan activists, for vegan business owners to be proactive in getting stories out there.
Yes, in fact, you've actually featured in the, I noticed you featured in the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, the ABC's Drum, or The Drum as it's called, and you know, you've been
BBC
able to
as well.
BBC as well.
Yeah, in the UK, they recently did a video interview with me, so that was good.
That is excellent. I mean, that is really, I think, what has been probably the biggest change that I've seen has been that mainstream acceptance that's come through, you know, and that's why I asked you earlier whether you know, even if it's a negative, you know, story about veganism, at least it's using the word, and, you know, it's getting it out there, you know, it's making it more common. It's like, so people are reading about vegan and veganism, and that is, so they might be reading about it in a negative light, but my goodness, with a lot of my non-vegan friends, I'm really amazed, especially probably in the last year or two, how much they will mention veganism to me without me saying anything to them first.
Yeah,
you know?
Nice.
They'll just start up a conversation, and it'll be something about vegan. And I know, I almost write it down now the number of times it happens. I'm like, this is quite impressive. It's in people's minds.
Yeah.
Now, it might initially be negative in their minds, but this is where we can hopefully, you know, create awareness around it and correct some of their misunderstandings and so
absolutely.
Forth.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. I mean, obviously, you know, there's been some negative stories this year about, for example, people starving their babies by feeding them a quote vegan diet, which when you read beyond the headline, it's actually nothing to do with the you know, the diet being vegan. It's just they weren't feeding their baby right, full stop. And you know, let's have a look at other neglect cases that, you know, that have served their babies meat. We don't hear about that. So yeah, there's that kind of sensationalism, and that can be a little bit frustrating. But so that's why I say it is important for us to counteract that, you know, be active on social media, because we are seeing a lot of people, like I've noticed in vegan groups, even you think it's going to be people who are already vegan, but there's quite a few people, say, in vegan Facebook groups that have just joined, and they're kind of like, look, I'm not vegan yet, but I'm really interested and I'm curious about it. And I think that's a brilliant opportunity, like you say, you know, to demystify what it's all about, to help them to, you know, to become a vegan, yeah, to become vegan and stay vegan and be with it permanently. So yeah,
so definitely. So you're fresh off the bat from the Melbourne Vegan Expo,
World Vegan Day Festival. Yeah, it was on Sunday. Yeah,
2 days ago. Yeah. So, share with us a bit more of your experiences there. You spoke there, as you were saying earlier, and
yeah, it was great. I mean, World Vegan Day in Melbourne always gets, you know, really good high foot traffic. It's very well organized, very professional, whole range of talks on all aspects of veganism, lots of different things to do, lots of stalls. So yeah, I spoke, my talk was called Will Vegan Capitalism Save the World? And it was looking at the pros and cons that I touched on earlier of the multinationals coming on board, either buying vegan businesses, investing in them, or bringing out vegan products of their own. I also hosted a vegan business owners panel, and we had some good discussion
there. I saw the pictures of that.
And then I was on a stall I was sharing with my friend Claire Mann, who's a vegan psychologist. So I did a nice meet and greet, sold some books, and just ate lots of food, ate lots of vegan food. Always eat lots of vegan food at these festivals.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it was a lovely day. It was nice to see there were some new food stalls there, which I hadn't seen before. So I got to try out some new things. So yeah, it was a fantastic day. I love those kind of events. I love speaking at those kind of events and emceeing and hosting. I'm kind of in my element there. I get excited. So yeah, it was a really good day.
Yes, and so you should get excited. I mean, it's fantastic to get, you know, such wonderful people together like that. And also you mentioned Claire Mann, who's actually going to be on the Vegan Hour in 2 weeks' time. So
lovely. Yeah, she's really nice. She and I are very good friends. I mean, she'll be staying a couple of nights. She stays whenever she's in town, because she lives in the Blue Mountains now. So whenever she's in town, she usually stays over with us, and sometimes her partner Brendan and their dogs stay, and it's lovely. So yeah, we're really very good friends.
That's fantastic. So with the World Vegan Day, you know, talking to the people that were coming, the people that were just the general public that was coming along, was there a large percentage of non-vegans that were curious, or what were you able to sort of ascertain?
It's difficult to say. I mean, because I'm kind of in a niche within a niche, because not everyone wants to start a vegan business. So the people that were coming up and talking to me, it was quite interesting, because one woman did real, she bought a copy of my book. So she was interested in starting a vegan business, but then it slipped out. You know, she said, oh, I'm a pescatarian. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I thought, well, great. She's gone away with a copy of, you know, how to start a vegan business. So and I think that's nice, because I think these festivals, I mean, I know certainly in the UK with VegFest UK in London, which I love, I've spoken there a couple of times, and I love the way that's run. Like, that's, you know, on a massive scale as well at Olympia, and I know that a lot of people that go through there are and they actually do surveys as well, are not yet vegan. And I know with the surveys that they've done, obviously it's, you know, it depends on the amount of people that actually fill in the survey. But what they found is a very large portion of those people who are not yet vegan, who have gone along because they're curious, said that after attending the event, they plan to go vegan and, you know, stay vegan. So I think that's really interesting. I think to make those events as warm and welcoming as possible, to have a variety of talks and a variety of, you know, food demos, you know, all of it, so that they can just experience it and go, oh, wow, this is really interesting. So I think both of them, I think that's the same World Vegan Day. I think they attract quite a lot of people who are just, oh, what is this vegan thing about? And they come along, and I think they're blown away, you know, by all the, you know, the different aspects of it, you know, the food, the clothing, the skincare, the products, but then also, you know, the health side of it, the environmental side of it, you know, and it's just, and the fun side of it. Like, there's usually entertainment at these events. Like, I mean, it's such a lovely day out, and I really take my hat off to the organizers of those. I mean, I organize small events, like, you know, for vegan entrepreneurs, nothing on the scale of these, and I really take my hat off to the organizers of these big events, because I think they have a massive impact, and it takes such a lot of work to pull it off and put it all together. But I think they really are important for changing people's hearts
definitely.
And minds.
Yeah. Definitely a big shout out to anyone that's doing that, because I wouldn't want to be trying to do it. It'd be too much involved. But that is fantastic. But my thought there, as you were describing, you know, just normalizing veganism for people that are coming along to these events, you know, so that they can see that anything that they're doing now, there's a vegan alternative, and it's very acceptable. It's very, you know, easy. I think, and the other thing I got out of what you said then too, is that it's non-judgmental. It's just accepting the person where they're at and saying, look, this is the alternatives. This is the compassionate alternatives. And, you know, are you aware of it? And, you know, they're like, no, that's great. You know, here's this product I didn't know about. Here's this product I didn't know about. Here's, you know, so I think that's serving a fantastic, you know, just, I can't even think, but it's doing a great duty, you know, to help people just understand what's out there and that. So
It's very important, I think, to not be judgmental, just picking up on what you've said there, because I remember I talked about the story of the school teacher. She was so nice to me, like, you know, when she said, oh, I'm vegan, I said, oh, what's that? Like, I was on an animal rights, you know, an anti-vivisection march. She could have jumped down my throat and said, what are you doing on an animal rights march with a cheese in your sack? Do you know what I mean? She could have been really angry and in my face, but she wasn't. She was really kind, she was really nice, she explained everything. And I think that's that is really important. I think particularly been vegan as long as we have, sometimes we forget what it's like when we weren't, you know, and none of us is perfect, even on other things, you know, in regards to human rights and environmental aspect, you know, that we're always kind of continually learning. So yeah, I think it is important to just encourage people and meet with the carrot, with, well, or maybe not the carrot, maybe the carrot's not as exciting, but I don't know, with the vegan hot dog rather than the
I immediately thought of vegan cheesecake, but that's just me.
Yeah, exactly. Any of that, anything lovely. Yeah,
so that's the way that you've got to encourage people. So rather than criticize them and chastise them and say what you're doing is wrong, because it just doesn't work that way. So that's the way. So I'm you know, vegan business is something that has fascinated me for quite a long time, and I talk a lot about vegan businesses, and I like to support fully vegan businesses as much as possible, because I think, for me, I think, you know, if somebody's gone to the trouble of creating a business that's going to be appealing to a smaller section of the market, you know, so if a fully vegan business is there and it's appealing to a smaller section of the market, and somebody's putting in a lot of their money into it and you know, blood, sweat and tears into it, you know, the least I can do as a vegan is say, geez, I really appreciate what you're doing here, and you know, I want to support you as much as possible. So that's been my philosophy for a few years now, to, as much as possible, to do that. And I wondered, you know, what your feedback has been, because, you know, you're working with vegan businesses, and I wanted to ask you some questions about some of the challenges that, for starters, that a vegan business faces that maybe is that a non-vegan business wouldn't face.
Sure. I mean, it's a good question. And I agree with you, and I aim to do that as much as possible myself. You know, I think it is really important for us to support, as vegans, as animal activists, to support ethical vegan businesses, and particularly those that also tick the boxes on human rights and sustainability as well. And even if you can't financially support them, because sometimes, because they haven't got the economies of scale, so sometimes certain vegan products are going to be more expensive, you can still support them by giving them a shout out on social media, you know, giving them a bit of a promotion on there. So I think there's different ways you can support them. In terms of the challenges, I mean, there are some challenges that are applicable to all business owners, whether, you know, whether they're vegan or not. I guess with on the vegan side is, you know, because you're coming at it from the ethical perspective, so there's more involved in, for example, sourcing of the ingredients, like sourcing of the products, checking the ingredients. When my partner and I, Trace, when we first came to Australia back in 2001 to get our visas, we actually opened a vegan hair and beauty salon. So I was tasked with, you know, making sure that, you know, all the products we had, and I was ringing, you know, Paris at one time, you know, in the middle of the night to find out if this particular brand of, you know, salon only shampoo contained, you know, any animal products. So I think there's more, you know, there's more time and effort involved a lot of the time in the sourcing of the ingredients. Sometimes those ingredients might cost more because, unfortunately, and this is what I mean about our systems being so broken, the ethical products, you know, that are, you know, cruelty-free, environmentally friendly and better for people. In other words, they're more ethical products or ingredients tend to be more expensive, which is totally the wrong way around, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is.
Yes.
So that can be a challenge. And of course, and on that as well, tied in with that is, as I mentioned, the economies of scale, which is true, I think, for any small business of any kind, is that you can't bulk buy when you're at a certain size. So I would say those are the key ones. I think for all of them, I mean, I've hosted vegan business owners panels, including at a trade show in the UK, VegFest UK Trade, and one of the most popular panels, and continues to be, and I'm often approached by people, is how to get the business funded. You know, so how do they raise capital? Do they look for investment, or do they go for the loan and that kind of thing? So, and then of course, you know, just kind of getting out there, because nowadays there's even more, and I put in quotes, competition. Not only have we got the big guys, you know, coming in, the big multinational corporations bringing out vegan products, but also there are now more vegan businesses than ever. And of course, that's a wonderful thing, but you're no longer the only vegan shoe company in town. You're no longer the only vegan cheese around. So I think that's, you know, there's obviously that challenge, which again is the same for a lot of businesses, is how do you stand apart from the crowd? How do you make that point of difference and stay top of mind? So when someone is looking to buy a vegan chocolate or a vegan coat or shoes or, you know, food item, that, you know, your brand is top of mind. So I think they're the kind of the main key challenges.
Yeah, it's... It is interesting when you're talking about, you know, there is competition now from other vegan businesses as well as from the big non-vegan businesses, the big
food. But I put it in quotes because it's not really competition, because we're all on a shared mission of making it work.
I wanted to get your input on this, because we here locally on the Gold Coast, probably about, it's going back maybe 18 months ago now, we had a period of about 12 months, I think we had about 8 to 10 fully vegan places, eateries closed down in a period of about 12 months. And it was like, it really was, when I say Gold Coast, actually, it was a slightly bigger area than that. It was from Byron Bay up to the Sunshine Coast. Right. But it was really like, wow, here goes another one, and here goes another one, you know. And at that point, I started asking questions. You know, I'm like, I'm asking, some of these owners were friends of mine, and, you know, so I spoke to them afterwards, tried to find out why this was happening. Was there a general, you know, trend happening? Was there a reason that could be applied across all these businesses? At the same time that was happening, I was actually contacted by some business owners in different parts of the world. So I got to speak to business owners in different parts of Australia, also in the UK, in the US, in New Zealand. I think that was the main places. And one of the feedback that I got from vegan business owners was that when they would start a vegan business, especially an eatery, because that's the type of business that that I was dealing with, was that there would be a really fantastic uptake initially of the local vegan community coming in and supporting them and trying them and all the rest. And then this would die off, and they would end up with the bulk of their customers being non-vegan. And this, you know, this was like, I found this surprising, and the feedback I got more than once was basically that the vegan community was going elsewhere. And I thought, okay, there can't be, I mean, your business has been going for years, and you're being supported primarily by non-vegans. So this I found very interesting. The vegan community wasn't supporting the vegan businesses. They were actually going to non-vegan businesses. And I would say, well, how would you know that? And, you know, and in one instance, a business owner said, because all our regulars, they post on social media where they eat now, and it's not with us. They're eating with at non-vegan places. So I just wanted to get your feedback on, you know, have you seen that trend? Have you come across that before, and why that might happen? And also, before I get your answer there, I just want to acknowledge a comment there from Luba that says, hello, Katrina and Harry. Big pleasure to listen to Katrina. Thank you for coming and sharing your priceless experience. That's very nice, Luba. Thank you for that comment.
Thank you, Luba. Hi. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was good. So, yeah, what have you, you know, what can you add to that, or what can you enlighten us with on that?
So I think it goes back to something I touched on just a little bit earlier when I said you're not the only vegan restaurant in town now. And I think some of the vegan restaurants and cafes that have been around a long time, they've had, of course, the vegans have gone there because they've had nowhere else to go. They've had no other option.
Right.
Now, obviously, economies, things change, society changes. And I think you've got to, you've got to kind of up your game. You've got to continue to be innovative. You mentioned that a lot of those businesses, when they're then getting non-vegan customers, or pre-vegans, as I like to optimistically call them. That's actually great. That's actually brilliant. I mean, that's what you want. And I don't think any vegan business, and particularly a vegan food business, you cannot rely on only having that vegan market, because it is, I mean, yes, we're growing and things are getting more exciting, but we're still a very small chunk of the population. So I think you've got to really kind of up your game and make sure that you're offering amazing food so that people of all kinds want to come and see you and support you. I should also put out, though, the fact, I mean, certainly a lot of the vegan entrepreneurs that I've spoken to that have run these kind of businesses say they are doing it tough, whether they're vegan or not. This is everywhere, like retail, for example, and that includes, you know, eateries, are really having a tough time at the moment. Even the big guys are suffering, their profits are down. So I think we have to kind of look at it in that bigger context. So rather than saying, oh, it's because the vegans are eating elsewhere. Well, that's great, but it's your job to entice them back. So if you haven't changed your menu in 5 years, well, you better get changing it, you know, but also you do want to be attracting the pre-vegans, getting some local press, you know. I know there was one business, I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but in, I think they were in Melbourne, and they made these weird coloured looking things like blue matcha or something, like these weird blue drinks that people hadn't seen before. Of course, the media got really interested and excited. Yes. So of course, people kind of go, oh, it's a new thing. People love new and innovation, and vegans are no different. So I think, you know, that you've just really got to try and continue to be as innovative as possible, you know, make sure that your food, your customer service, everything about your eatery and your restaurant is amazing. And don't only try to appeal to the vegan community, because like we say, you know, if they've now got more choice, whether it's other vegan restaurants or mainstream, you know, they're going out with their friends and family to mainstream restaurants and they can now eat off the menu, you know, you've just got to kind of make yourself a destination place that everybody is going to be wowed by. And I know it's not easy. I don't want to sound dismissive and suggest that is, as I say, everybody is doing it tough in retail and in that industry altogether. But I think it's a case of, you know, not being able to rest on your laurels and continuing to, you know, to post on your social media, try and get some local or even national media coverage if you're doing something innovative.
Yeah, well, I think that's beautiful. It's a great understanding of it and great advice there as well. So I wanted to ask you, in your vegan book, you say that vegan business is a form of animal activism, which actually I strongly believe in as well. I think that's an awesome way of looking at it, and I just wanted you to expand on that. And oh, I also wanted to say hello to Brooke, who's watching. Thanks for watching, Brooke. She just said hello.
Hi, Brooke.
We've got a comment there from Pip. Hang on. Hi there. I was just going to say it's been the hardest for retail, especially, but also food service for a long while. Yeah. Retail is especially finding it hard, and Pip would know because she's been in that industry for for quite a while now. So
it is tough. So to your question, it's interesting because I come from an activist background, and I remember actually it was about 4 years ago when I wrote the book and started the blog and then the podcast and kind of immersed myself in this vegan and plant-based business world. And it's quite interesting, a friend of mine who sort of known me for a while, known me as an activist, and said, oh, he said, why have you given up activism to focus on business? And I just looked and I said, are you kidding me? You know, I'm working with vegan business owners, and I think, look, there are so many different forms of activism for, you know, from writing petitions to going out on the streets, you know, all the, you know, rescue, you know, all these kinds of different activism. But by actually creating a vegan brand, a vegan business that is, you know, offering products that are, you know, don't involve animal exploitation and also ideally will be as sustainable as possible. And again, you know, there's no such thing as perfect at the moment, and, you know, are also, you know, better for people in terms of your health, then how can that not be a form of activism? You know, if there were no, so when we were doing all this animal activism saying, don't eat meat, don't eat dairy, stop exploiting animals, and then there were no vegan products, well, how's that going to work? You know, how are we even going to eat as vegans? Do you know what I mean? It's like, so I think it is a form of activism. Yeah. A lot of the vegan entrepreneurs I know are activists, and that's how they've chosen. You know, there's a lot of high wealth individuals that I mentioned, investors. Now I've got a list on a blog post on my website, how to find an investor for your vegan business. And I've got a list of vegan and vegan friendly investors. And these are high wealth individuals who are committed animal activists. You know, they're not just jumping on it because it's on the bandwagon. And they've got really robust careers in finance and investment. And they're also you know, really passionate animal activists, and they're using their skills and their money to really kind of change the world. So I absolutely believe that, you know, running and operating an ethical vegan business is definitely a form of activism. Don't let anyone else tell you otherwise.
Well said, and I strongly agree. Well said. I call it vegan food activism because I think, you know, it's
well,
the
not
thing
just food
that,
though. You know, it's clothing, it's shoes, it's products, it's everything.
That's true. Isn't it funny that I immediately or always just think of food?
Well, it is a main thing. I mean, obviously, you know, we have to eat. Well, we have to clothe ourselves, but, you know, eating is a bit. I mean, food, of course, it is a big part. But when you realize, I know when I first went vegan, I was shocked. I bought my little animal-free shopper from the Vegan Society in the UK. And back then, this was before online, it was a little booklet. And I remember being horrified at how much animals are exploited, like, you know, with matches, you know, and all these things. I was like, oh, my God. You know, there's animal products in. So, I think it definitely is a form of activism, running a vegan business, for sure.
And it's definitely a wake-up call when we realize that, the way I put it is that if humans can find a way to put an animal product into something, they will. You know, it's really a wake-up call when you realize how common that has been. You know, just that it's not, you know, not even thought of. It's like, no, we just put this, you know, whatever this animal component product is in our, you know, in something we're creating. It's like, wow, you know, it's just a reflection of where society has been for quite a long time. But of course, as we've said, that is changing, and it's changing.
It is. And there's a company actually in the US called Geltor, which is creating animal-free gelatin. So that's what I mean. I think the developments in food tech and also in fashion, in some of the fibers as well, are just like amazing. I mean, it's just going off in those sectors, and I think it's wonderful. And in the beauty industry, you're getting celebrities who are not necessarily vegan yet themselves, but they're bringing out, say, a beauty range, and they're by default they're making it vegan because they know that's what people want, and I think that's fantastic. So
it's a good sign of the times, and there are some amazing fashion, like shoes made out of pineapple leather.
That's
like, wow. I keep seeing new things. What was that one?
Cactus, I think, was another one, a form of cactus leather. Like, there's all kinds of, amazing stuff, and they're sustainable. And the nice thing about the pineapple leather, for example, is that it's using part of the pineapple that will otherwise be wasted, and it's providing extra income for those farmers in places like the Philippines. It's a win-win, you know, win-win-win. People, planet, animals. It's win-win-win.
That is awesome. I love it when people come up with ideas like that. That's fantastic. Now, we were talking about activism. Is there for you personally a form of activism that you have discovered is the most effective? I mean, would it be fair to say it is business, or would you think there are other forms of street activism or online activism? Is there something?
I wouldn't pick one. I don't think we can, any of us can pick one, because it takes everything. We don't know what's going to tip someone over the edge. Like, they might have already seen various things, and then they perhaps hear a talk, and then they go, oh, I finally get it now. You know, there might be several touch points that they've had, and then, you know, something, but it's not that final thing that they've heard or seen that's tipped them over. It's been a gradual exposure. So, you know, I mean, for example, a friend of mine, who's a very high profile investor, he told me that when he was a teenager, he was sitting on a train and someone handed him an anti-vivisection leaflet, and that just kind of switched him. And he's just like, the way he's run it, the whole of his businesses have all been on a vegan, on vegan principles. So I think all of them are important, you know, from the creative activism to the, you know, more kind of direct action. I mean, I've been involved in a whole range. I've sat down in streets, been chased by riot police in the UK, you know, 20 odd years ago. You know, I've been outside vivisection labs shouting and chanting. I think that you know, we don't know what is the most effective, because I think it could be different for everyone. So I try not to criticize any different, you know, types of act. But there's some that I might think right now, I think, that might not be, doesn't seem to me right now to necessarily be the right thing, but you just don't know. So I would just encourage people to be creative. I think we do have to continue to be creative in our activism. And I think being online, that's certainly, you know, offers us some opportunities, but also, you know, taking it offline as well. So I think there are all different types of activism. Business is one of them. It's a big one. But it's I wouldn't put any one particular form of activism above any others.
That's fine. And in fact, I think when you say that we need to be creative, I think that is what I have been most impressed by is activist creativity, coming up with different ways of getting the message out, you know.
Yeah, like the Dominion billboard. So I recently worked with the guys, the makers of Dominion. They'd already decided and organized this whole billboard, and then I did a bit of PR, helped to get it out on social, got it on ABC radio. But how creative was that? You know, the government brings in these ag gag laws, so they put a thing on a billboard with watchdominion.com. I mean, you know, and the Go Fair, I think the people in the UK, the Go, is it Be Vegan Go Fair campaign in the UK.
Yeah, Be Vegan.
Sandra Higgins.
Fair, Go Vegan.
Yes, it's something like that. I think they are right. They have got really, like, you know, quite intent, like in your face kind of, you know, promotion, like adverts on these big billboards. And I think that's fantastic, you know. So I think we've got to keep up that creativity to, you know, help spark people's views and thoughts, and in seeing animals, particularly farmed animals, in a different way.
It is interesting to note that the last time I read statistics on the effectiveness of activism, that the number one most effective form was actually documentaries, which there are, you mentioned Dominion, and there are some fantastic, you know, documentaries around, have been for probably the last 5 to 10 years, some really good documentaries that just produce amazing feedback from people. And of course, Game Changers has also just, you know, amazingly created so much awareness. And so one of the big things that, that people really relate to is the information coming through documentaries, and also the personal thing from family and friends, and that's apparently statistics show that that's very effective forms of change. But as you say, you know, looking at all the different areas of activism, some things will appeal to people in different ways, and, you know, just push them over the edge so they go, aha.
I mean, it's even with those protests in Melbourne, like I say, initially it was this outcry of, you know, this is not the way to do it. But then I think there was a comedian and radio TV personality, Michelle Laurie, came out, and she said, look, she said, it was really inconvenient because I was stuck in traffic, but you know what, the vegans were right, and I'm now going to reconsider my eating habits. So you just don't know what you initially might think, oh, that's perhaps not the way to go about it. But then, you know, a high profile person says, well, I've been impacted by it, and then puts it out on her social. So I think we just don't know. We've got to continue to be creative.
When you first came to Australia, and in 2001, you were saying, and you set up a vegan hair studio in was it in Sydney?
Hair and beauty salon, in Edgecliff in Sydney. We had 4 years to tick all the boxes. So it was quite stressful, to be honest, because...
ahead of its time.
Pretty much it was. And it was quite funny because I remember we had an Irish girl come to work for us, and, like, you know, on one of those holiday visas, she'd come to work temporarily. Yeah. We had to employ Australian residents, but she was in part time, and she had, like, no clue about anything. She was like, what is this vegan thing? What do you mean there's no animal products? Like, she was told, that's probably not my best Irish accent, but, you know, it was kind of quite interesting. But people did travel. What was interesting is that people did travel. We put it as it was vegan, but we called it the natural hair and beauty shop. So we said, you know, it's cruelty free. We weren't really pushing the word vegan too much, only to the vegan community, but it was, you know, as sustainable and natural as possible. It wasn't perfect, but as possible. So people were traveling from different suburbs to come to it. It was, and this was all before social media and everything. So it was fairly pioneering, and it was quite it was fun for a few years. I mean, I was kind of like doing that during the daytime and doing some freelance journalism. My partner Tracy, she's a clinical hypnotherapist and naturopath, so, you know, she was kind of running that and seeing, you know, therapy clients until we could eventually, you know, close that business down and focus on, you know, what we really wanted to do. But it was fun. It was interesting.
Definitely ahead of its time. So we haven't got much time left, so that's pretty good. I'm not going to keep you all night. It's only the vegan hour, not the vegan week. but I wanted to. I noticed that with your book, Vegan Ventures, there's a few tips there in helping vegan businesses, and I just wanted to. You've got 5 social media tips for vegan business owners that I was reading here, and I liked that. It's sort of how would I put it? It's sort of self-explanatory in a way when I read some of this stuff, and I thought, okay, this is just it makes sense. It's common sense. That's what I'm looking for. But I just wanted to. Mention a couple of them and get your feedback on them, because you've said to choose just 1 or 2 social media platforms to start with and focus on them. I mean that's common sense, but I guess do you find that more effective to do that than to sort of try and spread yourself too thin, basically?
Yeah, and I think it depends how much time you've got, because every business is different. Because you've got to remember that, you know, say you're a service provider, for example, and then there's people who are making products, and you know, and sometimes people are even starting out their vegan business as a side hustle, so they may be working full time and starting their vegan business on the side. And so it really depends how much time you've got. And if you try to be on too many platforms, and you're not really kind of knocking it out of the park with any single one of them, then that can be quite difficult, and it can feel overwhelming, and it can seem quite a bit depressing, because you're maybe not getting, you know, the followers or the engagement that you would like, because you're sort of spread too thin. I think you need to pick the platform. If you're a service provider, then LinkedIn might be the better platform for you to spend more time on than, say, Facebook. Whereas if you're a food brand, then Instagram or Pinterest might be better, because you've got the visuals to go with. But I think it can be quite a good idea, like, especially once you've got your brand down and your business name down. What you can do is, like, get the, at least register the account so that you've got the name. So if you were going to start a YouTube channel, for example, you might just want to nab the name before anyone else does. But then, you know, you don't need to start creating content on those straight away. You can kind of pick 1 or 2. And then once you kind of get those going, also, you've got to remember, where are your clients as well? Where are your clients? I mean, there's Twitter. I mean, I actually don't like Twitter. And I recommend that people do have a Twitter account. And the reason is that journalists are there, and it's a very easy way to connect easily with journalists. Sometimes they'll even put call outs, like they want to speak to an expert. So even though I personally don't like Twitter, I'm on it because I know I have to be, but it's not my favorite platform. But it's, where are your clients? You know, where are your customers going to be? If your customers are on Instagram, well, you want to make sure you're doing Instagram well. You know, or like I said, if you're a service provider, you might want to be spending more time, you know, writing and publishing stuff on LinkedIn, and, you know, engaging in conversations there. So I think it's just figuring that out.
It makes sense. What don't you like about Twitter?
Oh, a couple of things. Well, one, I don't like being, you know, if you're trying to have a discussion, I don't really like being limited to whatever it is, 200, I think they've upped the character now, 240 characters. But also, I mean, it can be a bit of a toxic place, Twitter. I mean, and also it's very bitty, so it's hard to keep a train of the different conversations. Where at least with Facebook, you put a post up and then you've got the comments underneath it. So it's a bit more of an organic, it's a bit more like a normal conversation. With Twitter, it's almost like putting something out there, and over here you're having an argument, and then it's disappeared, and it's just all a bit bitty and annoying.
That makes sense. And
it is a good way to connect with journalists, and so it has got its advantages.
So that definitely fits into finding the social media that works best with what your intentions are and what your business is, and that, which is what you were saying. So, and I also liked, I'm going to start winding up shortly, but I also liked that you mentioned to engage with your audience, don't just broadcast. And it's one of the reasons why I personally love live stream, because, you know, you can do that. You can have an audience interacting and asking questions and sharing and so forth, rather than just doing a video presentation. That's just, you know, it might
and
be
I'm
more
professional. I'm laughing because I know, because I had a concert, I had someone on my show called John Oberg, he's an American, and he's like really good on social media stuff, and he gave so many good tips, so that I actually said to him, look, can you give me a few tips? And he's been telling me, you know, do more impromptu video, like do some live video. And I haven't been, like, because I'm a writer, you see, when I write, I would never send a first draft out into public or to an editor. I would edit it and tweak it. And it's the same with video. I feel like, well, I like to be able to edit it and put it out there. And then you and I know, before we came on, like, we were late coming on because of the tech. So it's all that. So I'm chuckling when we say that, but you're right, it is. And, you know, when you can go live and you've actually got people there and they're asking questions and you're engaging, I mean, but that is true. Rather than just kind of putting stuff out there, if people take the time to comment, I mean, it can get a bit overwhelming. I try as much as I possibly can. Like, if someone comments on one of my posts, for example, say on Facebook or on LinkedIn, I do my best to, like, make a comment and, you know, to reply back an acknowledgement. Also, it's a good thing to do because then the algorithms on the social media like that, because the more conversation you've got going, then Facebook, LinkedIn thinks, oh, this post is popular, people are engaging on it. So there is a double reason for doing that. A, it's a nice and polite thing to do. If someone's taken the time to comment or ask a question, then, you know, it's nice to be able to respond to it. But also, it will make your post appear to more people, so that there is a double win. You get paid for being nice, you see, paid for being ethical. Remember I said about earlier about, you know, if you're ethical and it pays off, so it works.
That's actually a good point to wind up tonight's interview on. What is the best way for people to get hold of you, to, if they want to get you to help them with their vegan business, or find out more information, or get a copy of your book, or listen to your podcast? What would be the best
Probably the URL at veganbusinessmedia.com. That's got there's links to everything on there. But feel free to connect with me on social. There's my Katrina Fox personal profile. Everything I post on there is public, so you can follow me there. And I've also got a Facebook page, Katrina Fox, vegan journalist, author and speaker, and on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to follow me. If you type Katrina Fox in, generally speaking, I'll come up. But otherwise, yeah, veganbusinessmedia.com. You can find out about all things vegan business on there.
Excellent. I'll make sure that they're linked into the live stream, and also they will be you'll be tagged in that, and you'll also be tagged in the YouTube version of tonight's episode when that's uploaded in the next couple of days.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to start winding up, and I'm going to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the Vegan Hour tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Harry. It's been lovely. You asked some great questions, and I really enjoyed myself. So thank you so much for everything you do and for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for everything you do. You're the one that's doing so much. It's just wonderful. So, and as for people watching, if you can rewatch this live stream at any time, or you can wait till it's on YouTube in a day or two's time. And I'm also going to be mentioned that we're back in 2 weeks' time for episode 23 with vegan psychologist and your friend, Claire Mann. So that's back on Tuesday, November the 26th. So I'm looking forward also to hearing from Claire, because she has also done so much for vegan awareness.
Yeah, she's great.
So two wonderfully powerful women, yourself tonight and Claire in 2 weeks' time. So thank you for everyone that's watched tonight. Thank you again, Katrina. And remember, guys, to live. I've got to get there. Live vegan and save lives.
Oh, I saw you do that. I was going to try and do it. I'm not very good at that. I do watch Star Trek as well. Look, I'm rubbish at it. Oh, look, it's all going. There we go. That's as much as I can do.
You're doing well for vegan something that was not rehearsed at all. So you've done
not
very
at all.
Well. So, thanks again, Katrina. And I hope to speak with you again soon sometime.
Thanks, Harry. And thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.